Grad Club pregame show ahead of the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff. Gales Game Day on CFRC, over a century of excellence.
As summer winds down, KPP Concerts is keeping it hot this fall with a stacked lineup of great concerts at the Broom Factory this September. On September 12th, check out Mountainhead, and then Colorado on September 14th, and Punk Icons Propaganda on September 15th. Don't miss Hamilton's The Dirty Nil on September 19th, followed by The Broke's tribute to The Strokes on September 20th. And then on September 26th, check out Petit Beliveau and Neo Folk Icons Bridge City Sinners on September 27th. The month ends with Yukon Blonde, the night of September 28th at Broom Factory. All shows are co-sponsored by us here at CFRC 101.9 FM. And for a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Trip hop and the occasional interview. So that's Dark Glasses, Mondays at 2 p.m.
Queen's Parkinson's Kingston is a student-led club dedicated to raising awareness, fundraising, and supporting those affected by Parkinson's disease in both the Queens and Kingston communities. On September 6th, join Queen's Parkinson's Kingston for the 2025 Parkinson Canada Super Walk, taking place at Lake Ontario Park and running from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Learn more by reaching out to QPK at clubs.queensu.ca and following Queen's Parkinson's Kingston at queens4pd.kingston on Instagram.
Hey there, Kingston. Looking for the latest in arts and culture? Join me, Ellie Stern, Friday 3 to 4 p.m. for the Kingston Curator. Featuring interviews with artists themselves, I'll explore what's happening around town. From live music and theater to gallery shows, festivals, and more. Catch it live on CFRC 101.9 FM, stream at CFRC.ca, or listen anytime on the CFRC Podcast Network. The Kingston Curator, your backstage pass to Kingston's creative scene.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Tune in to Word Lab's Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9. Join your host, Arrow McCauley, for a free-flow show where words, ideas, and music mingle. Each week, we sit down with one of the local authors and artists leading writing workshops through the Word Lab's program. They'll share their stories, their insights, and maybe even a few secrets of their craft. Get your pens ready. After the chat, you'll get writing prompts to stretch your imagination, all set to a soundscape designed to help you focus, relax, and create.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, August 22nd, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be covering all the highlights from last week's Kingston City Council meeting. After receiving a tie vote at Planning Committee, a 40-room development at 92 Napier Road came before Council with no recommendation, leaving Council to debate the matter at their meeting on Tuesday, August 12th. The proposal, brought forward by Amber Peak Developments, calls for the construction of four 10-bedroom buildings at 92 Napier Road, a development that would mostly be marketed towards students. To make this possible, Amber Peak is seeking both an official plan amendment and a zoning bylaw amendment to rezone the site from general open space to urban residential space. The suggestion triggered a strong community response. Many residents spoke at last month's planning committee meeting, voicing opposition to the project. A petition opposing the development garnered 332 signatures. Opponents argued that allowing high-density student housing in the quiet, family-oriented neighborhood could lead to increased noise, heavier traffic, and contribute to existing residents relocating, many of whom work in local businesses, the nearby hospital, and educational institutions. Councillor Vincent Shinani, who sits on Planning Committee, described the meeting.
At Planning Committee, it was like, it was divisive in a way. For me, rezoning from open space to anything else, it would have to be a really good reason. It had to be a really good benefit to the community. And I don't think that this is it. Living where I live, you see like what happens with this type of housing, moving further and further west. It just drives everyone away, and then it becomes like families move away. There's schools nearby. It just totally changes the character of the neighborhood. And I think that moving forward, having spoken to a lot of the community members, there's a lot more support in density near the university versus moving further and further west.
For councillors like Shinani, who are opposed, the core concern was that the development would introduce student housing into one of the last streets in the area that is not student-focused. The proposal's potential rent, estimated at around $1,000 per bedroom, also heightened concerns. Councillor Connie Glenn summarized these fears before council.
So let's be honest about what we're turning this into, and we are putting this, we're making this into a student ghetto. It's one of the last pockets where there's a family, where there's family-oriented housing. People walk their kids to school. Neighbors know each other's names. It's a community built on long-term relationships. I'm certainly not anti-student, as everyone, I think, is aware. But it brings a different rhythm to the area. It's late-night turnover, noise complaints, short-term occupancy. It's a dynamic that's already saturating so much of the district. And so if we want families to live downtown, work downtown, then we need to make sure that we're providing space for them. And it's not about blaming students. It's also about providing balance. And it's not good for students either. Students are a vital part of our city, and they contribute a lot to it, but they can't afford what's being offered in, for the most part. And we heard at Planning Committee that these units, these bedrooms, I should say, would be $1,000 a piece. There'll be 40 students minimum here. That's $40,000 coming out of this. That's about profit. Now, I'm not above making a profit. I own a business. But we need a better vision for our city, and this isn't it. Students need safe, affordable housing, and they don't need to be in overpriced apartments in neighborhoods where they're going to have tensions with the permanent residents that are there.
Another key consideration for councillors was the risk of appeal to the Ontario Land Tribunal if the proposal was rejected. Mayor Patterson acknowledged the likelihood that the city would lose such an appeal.
I've never said this before, but I'll just say we have a 100% chance of losing at the OLT. Not even like a 95% chance, a 100% chance of losing. And quite frankly, I think the way that that would look, I think is terrible.
Councillor Gary Osteroff, who was against the development, noted the difficult position this potential outcome puts council in.
We're handcuffed. I don't know. I don't think we should be spending the money to fight it. We know we're going to lose it. And so, you know, it's us to deal with the province. So I'm speechless.
Both Mayor Patterson and Councillor Ryan Boehm expressed confusion at the intensity of the opposition, noting that new housing is a top city priority.
I'm a bit stunned, actually, by the discussion around the table tonight. We've put policies in place. We have a development application that meets those policies. And now we would go to the OLT and argue against the very policies that we put in place for the housing. I appreciate where the community is coming from. I don't want to minimize that in any way. Obviously, you know, we're trying to find a compromise, leave some green space there, allow some sustainability for the Lawn Bowling Club to continue. But quite frankly, we've also tried to push towards more integrated neighborhoods and not put all of the student housing, lump it in one area of the city as well. So I'm a bit exasperated, to be honest, by the discussion around the table. But obviously, I would encourage council to be consistent with the direction that we've taken as a council up until now, which is to say housing is a priority. All housing matters.
Let's no longer be the roadblock to getting more housing built. Because if in the end, this does, for whatever reason, end up the specter of the OLT there, we will lose. But all we've done then is increase the costs, spend a bunch more money, and wasted a lot of effort and delayed the incoming supply of housing units that we so badly need. And to be honest, we're asking for. It's like we're our own worst enemy at times. We ask for something, somebody offers it, and then we go, well, yeah, no, but not really like that. We want something different here. And if we do that for every housing development, somebody needs to explain to me why we even have an official plan.
Ultimately, council voted 7-6 against approving the required official plan and zoning bylaw amendments, halting the development for the time being. Kingston City Council is calling on the provincial government to investigate why some insurance companies are raising premiums or denying coverage for heritage-designated properties, despite provincial guidelines stating otherwise. The motion brought forward by Councillor Gary Osterhoff came before council on Tuesday night. This move comes after council has voted down several heritage designations in the last few months due to homeowners reporting that the designation was jeopardizing their ability to get or afford home insurance. Councillor Brandon Tozo spoke to this issue when the motion was up for discussion.
I really worry if we don't get figured out the insurance component of this. I really do worry that there will be a heavy backlash in the public against heritage. I think we already are feeling some of that frustration from the community. When we first got on to council, I didn't hear a single person, and now we have people coming in tears about getting their properties being heritage.
In the very same meeting, Kingston resident Terry Shea came before council asking that the heritage designation on her home be removed, expressing that she would not be able to afford the hike in insurance she claims was brought on by the designation.
I've heard many times designations should not affect insurance premiums. However, this is not true. My home insurance is now unaffordable, which leaves me no choice but to come up with a way to make the impossible possible. I've lived in my home for over 11 years with an annual premium of $4,300, and now I'm faced with choosing a policy of upwards of $20,000 or risk losing my mortgage. My insurance broker and I have been declined by an alarmingly high amount of leading insurance companies over the last 6 to 8 weeks. The Heritage program that drives homeowners into financial hardship does not build community pride. It creates instability, division, and conflict.
The province of Ontario has stated that insurance premiums should not go up as a result of a heritage designation. In her presentation to council, Shea cited the Insurance Bureau of Canada's brochure, Insuring the Living Past, which states that heritage properties can be more expensive to replace due to the layers of bureaucracy and bylaws surrounding repairing and rebuilding, among other factors. According to the National Trust of Canada, the industry is currently in a difficult spot, having to pay out massive claims due to extreme weather events, and is now going to great lengths to minimize any risks it can. They state older buildings, especially designated heritage buildings, appear to have become a target for this approach. While city staff and councillors have been searching for answers to help Shea and others in a similar predicament gain clarity and find a way forward, Councillor Connie Glenn says they have not been able to find clear answers.
What we keep being told is, well, the Ontario Heritage Act says that this isn't going to happen. It's not going to be a problem if you get a designation. But then we have property owner going to renew insurance and facing a skyrocketing rate. And what we can't get a clear answer on from anyone is this really due to the heritage designation or not? Because we've got a game of what I would call hot potato going on here. I don't want the heritage designation to be seen by members of the community as being a negative. But at the moment, that's pretty much what's being experienced.
The motion calls for insurance regulators, insurance industry representatives, and heritage professionals to work together to find solutions to protect heritage properties without unwarranted financial burden on homeowners, and find solutions to regulate the impact of heritage designation on insurance premiums. With unanimous support from Council, the call for clarity and resolution will be sent to the applicable regulatory and industry bodies, with hopes that heritage and homeowners will no longer have to be in conflict.
What this motion says is we are fed up with heritage being a scapegoat for increased insurance rates. And it's time that it's stopped, and that the province, who has put us in this situation, along with the insurance companies, come together and fix it. We all have to live in the community together. We want people to be able to value heritage and heritage properties and live in them, but be able to afford to live in them. So please get together and fix it. That's really what this ask is. We've gone, I think, as far as we can possibly go, and the community, I think, will be supportive of getting this sorted out as much as we will.
At their most recent meeting on Tuesday, Council unanimously passed a motion to take more measures to protect turtles. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Lisa Osanek, proposes the speed limit on Highway 2 East be lowered from 80 kilometers per hour to 60 kilometers per hour from Abbeydon Road to St. Lawrence Avenue, and that the no-passing zone be extended. Highway 2 East runs across a provincially significant wetland complex between Abbeydon Road and St. Lawrence Avenue. Due to its proximity to turtle habitat, the short stretch of road is known as a hotspot for turtle fatalities. While the city recently invested in installing turtle fencing along many parts of the wetland, there are still at least 9 access roads and a private road where turtles have easy access to get onto Highway 2 East. Councillor Osanek and proponents of the motion state more needs to be done to protect this at-risk species.
There's still some gaps where turtles can get in, and it's much easier to try to avoid any wildlife or, you know, pedestrians walking there or people, you know, riding their bikes if you're going slower, 60 to 70 kilometers per hour, than speeding going 80 to 90 kilometers per hour. So that's the gist of this motion.
Councillor Connie Glenn seconded the motion, agreeing that the current speed on Highway 2 is not just hazardous for turtles, but also people.
I travel down this stretch of road regularly to go from City Hall to home, and I can tell you that the speed, even though it's 80, often is traveled much more quickly, and that spot is dangerous, not just for turtles, but for people. I wouldn't consider biking through there. I would be too worried about getting hit, to be quite frank.
In addition to speed limit reduction, the motion also directs staff to bring a report to council in early 2026 to establish a prohibition of fishing on city property at turtle habitat areas. Mabin Armstrong, founder of local advocacy organization Turtles Kingston, appeared before council to speak to this specific issue.
Fishing and turtles, they don't mix. Recreational fishing may seem harmless, but for Canada's freshwater turtles, it presents a deadly risk. These ancient survivors are now facing one of the greatest threats, accidental hooking by anglers. Many freshwater turtles are opportunistic feeders, drawn to live bait or lures, which they mistake for prey. Once hooked, turtles often suffer a slow and painful decline. In far too many cases, the fishing line is simply cut, leaving the hook embedded inside the turtle, often deep in the throat or stomach, where it cannot be removed without veterinary intervention. A conservative estimate suggests that 1 in 3 turtles has been hooked at some point. Without medical treatment, most suffer and die prematurely.
Osanek and Glenn also stressed this portion of the motion before council.
Dr. Susan Carstairs, who's the lead vet and executive director of the trauma center, they got a new x-ray machine. And as they started x-raying turtles that had damaged shells from being hit by cars, they were flabbergasted at the number of turtles that were being x-rayed that have these hooks. So if we can all picture a time when we've had a really bad stomach ache, just multiply that pain by, you know, tenfold, a hundredfold of how much more painful it would be to actually deal with a hook in our stomach. And that is the purpose for this no fishing in turtle habitat areas.
My husband's been a fisherman since he was 10, maybe younger. And when I asked him about this, what he said to me is, yeah, we have lots of places to go fish. And he said it's not just about the hooks, it's about the lines that get tangled up and left in the water, all of it. And responsible fishermen don't want to see this happen. If there's any complaints about that, I think they're invalid. We have so much waterways, so many places you could possibly go to fish.
With the unanimous support of council, the changes will soon take effect, along with the addition of some flashier turtle warning signs in the area in 2026.
I think dropping the speed limit is going to be beneficial for multi-species turtles and us.
Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Friday, August 22nd, daytime high of 24 with lots of sun in the forecast. Saturday, August 23rd, it's looking like it's going to be a perfect day for the Queen's football home opener against the Western Mustangs. Daytime high of 26, feeling closer to 27. A slight possibility of rain later in the afternoon, but it should be a beautiful summer Saturday. Sunday, August 24th, mostly cloudy with the possibility of a thunderstorm here in the Kingston region. Daytime high of 24, feeling closer to 25. And to kick off next week, Monday, August 25th, daytime high of 22, 70% chance of rain. Otherwise, sunny throughout the day. Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians to allow for the temporary opening of the main marine navigation channel on Sunday, August 24th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Here are this week's relevant road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cataraqui Woods Drive, Rosanna to Holden is closed until August 28th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for roundabout upgrades. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Middle Road, Joyceville to Highway 2 is closed until August 22nd from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day to complete culvert relining. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Woodburn Road, Hitchcock to Whitechurch is closed for a contractor to complete culvert relining. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, San Beta Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Gardeners Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abidon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2 and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Avenue, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. Before we dive into a story from this week's council meeting about an enhanced community heat response plan, we're going to flash back to an older story. First, when council discussed a potential new maximum temperature bylaw in rental units, then when the original community heat response plan was completed.
At their meeting last week, councillors chose to move forward with a motion proposing a new maximum temperature bylaw for residential rental units. While landlords in Ontario are required to provide a minimum level of heat, the same obligation does not exist for air conditioning. The motion suggested an amendment to the existing property standards bylaw requiring landlords or property owners of residential units with air conditioning systems to maintain a temperature not exceeding 26 degrees Celsius from June 1st to September 30th. Environmental and health advocates believe the motion did not go far enough, requesting that the requirement extend to rental units that do not already have air conditioning installed. Anne Fu, Commissioner of Environmental Sustainability with the Queen's University Alma Mater Society, made the case for this amendment before council.
While I am grateful that the city has decided to put forward a motion to adopt a maximum allowable temperature in rental units, I'm disappointed to see that the language only applies to rental units that already have air conditioning systems. Many of Kingston's most precarious renters don't live in units with air conditioning systems in the first place and cannot afford to have them installed on behalf of the landlord. This motion won't help them access cooling, nor anyone else who is low income, disabled, or chronically ill, elderly, or supporting a family. I also want to say that although these testimonies are collected from the student district, this likely applies to many other tenants in many other areas of Kingston. We need a bylaw that not only establishes a maximum temperature in rental units, but that does so in a way that doesn't pass the costs on to tenants and that protects all Kingstonians, regardless of their ability to afford housing and cooling technologies. Through this bylaw, Kingston has a critical opportunity to stand up for the health and safety of its most vulnerable citizens and become a leader alongside other municipalities in Ontario working towards similar laws, including Toronto and Hamilton.
Councillor Jeff McLaren presented a petition with over 1,500 signatures from environmental organizations Seniors for Climate Action Now and 350 Kingston, urging the province of Ontario to direct landlords to keep temperatures in all rental units below 26 degrees Celsius during the summer without passing on costs to residents and tenants. Dr. Henry Swoboda, an emergency physician with Kingston Health Sciences Center, also spoke before council, stating that this is a necessary step to protect public health.
I've seen firsthand the devastating impact of extreme heat, and I have seen what happens when we fail to prepare for predictable disasters due to upfront costs. We see costs in human lives as well as downstream dollar costs that overwhelm our healthcare system. When patients come into the ER with heat illness, I often hear two things from them and their families. One is, I didn't think it was that hot, and two is, we just checked on them and thought they were all right. These statements reveal a dangerous reality. Heat can be sneaky. This isn't just about discomfort, it's about life and death.
A report by the Intact Center on Climate Adaption at Waterloo University named Kingston as one of the Canadian cities projected to be most exposed to extreme heat as the impacts of climate change become more prevalent. According to the report from city staff, very few municipalities in Ontario have a standalone adequate temperature bylaw, with Hamilton and Toronto currently exploring their options to enact a bylaw which would include rental units that do not currently have air conditioning. Robert Mello with the Kingston Property Rental Association, representing about 75 members with thousands of rental units, came to speak against the motion, claiming that the cost to landlords would be too high.
Possible solutions must involve all levels of government providing incentives to make necessary capital improvements. We must work together to meet these challenges. This downloading of costs onto landlords is unsustainable. We do know that there's a number of older buildings here. And of course, a lot of these buildings have tenants that have been there for 10 years and more, and they're paying, you know, somewhere between $600 and $1,000 per month rent when hydro alone, this doesn't include sewer and water. Hydro alone is $300 in the month. So it's basically going to push them out of the business. And so the low rents, it's just going to be another excuse to just abandon the property or sell it there's going to have an effect on housing for sure in the city, guaranteed.
Mello also stressed that the majority of units do not currently have air conditioning installed. When it came time for councillors to discuss, the city's lawyer Jenna Morley warned council that the city may not have the authority to mandate a maximum temperature in all rental units, as air conditioning is not included in landlord obligations in existing provincial legislation.
I'm going to decline to provide any further legal advice in open session this evening, but I would certainly advise council against hastily enacting a bylaw on uncertain jurisdictional grounds without an appreciation for the knock-on effects of that bylaw.
In the end, amendments were made to the motion, and it was decided that council will await the results of the push for this legislation in Toronto and Hamilton. or changes to provincial legislation that would allow the municipality to assuredly move forward with this mandate for all residential units. Councillor Vincent Shinani had the following comment on the amendments.
It could end up being where, say, these other municipalities that are trying to implement this, that they may run into roadblocks or do something like not properly, where we can evaluate that and say, okay, well, this is the mistakes that were made there. Then if we try a different way, learn from their mistakes, or maybe it's successful, and then we'd be like, okay, and we could just duplicate it.
Councillor Brandon Tozzo wrapped up his time stating the following.
I think if we vote this motion, we're going to frustrate both people who are advocating for tenants, and we're going to frustrate landlords who are not quite happy with this. Everyone's going to walk out of the room a little bit unhappy, which says to me what the municipality is doing tonight is adequate.
The amended motion passed with a vote of 12-1. With Councillor Gary Osteroff opposed, city staff will report back to council in the coming months with the necessary amending bylaw to provide a new maximum temperature for residential units with air conditioning systems. Other actions in the motion include advocacy to the provincial government and the development of a heat response strategy in partnership with the Southeast Health Unit. The city is making progress on a number of initiatives to protect residents from extreme heat. On February 4th, 2025, Council passed a motion to get the ball rolling on several initiatives geared towards preparing the city for rising temperatures, including setting a maximum temperature for residential rental units and creating a heat response plan. At their Tuesday night meeting, the city's Environment, Infrastructure, and Transportation Policies Committee took a look at the completed community heat response plan, created in collaboration with the Southeast Health Unit. Kingston is experiencing more frequent and intense heat events. According to the plan, by 2050, the number of days over 30 degrees Celsius is projected to rise from 6 to 22 annually, and days over 32 degrees Celsius are expected to increase from 1.2 to 8.3. These conditions not only threaten public health, but also put pressure on city infrastructure and essential services. The Community Heat Response Plan outlines the actions to be taken when Environment and Climate Change Canada issues a heat alert, focusing on mitigating heat-related health risks, especially for vulnerable populations. As for immediate actions outlined in the report, the core focus of the response plan is the establishment and promotion of cooling centers. Upon a heat warning, the city opens designated cooling centers and ensures that all city-funded emergency shelters also serve as cool-down locations. With this being the central focus in the plan, citizens raised concerns about the accessibility of cooling centers. Kingston resident Tara Kaner spoke before the committee and raised concerns about potential barriers to accessing these centers, including transportation, limited hours of operation, and social stigma.
Cooling centers during heat waves are part of the solution, as studies suggest. However, there is little known about who uses them and whether they are effective in reducing heat illness and death. Obstacles to utilizing cooling centers are multiple. My request to you is that you take the time to consider the barriers before you endorse the community heat response plan. Please address the difficulties so that the cooling centers will be effective.
In response, the city's manager of climate leadership, Julie Salter-Keene, noted that the plan will be subject to continuous updates, including looking into what data can be collected while preserving the privacy of those using the centers and offering more public transportation to make the centers more effective. In addition to cooling centers, the city will also be extending public pool hours during heat events and continuing its Keep Cool While It's Hot campaign, which began in 2024 to educate residents about the risks associated with extreme heat and provide guidance on preventing and managing heat-related illnesses. Beyond immediate relief efforts, the heat response plan also outlines longer-term strategies. These include strategic tree planting and green infrastructure to reduce urban heat, enhancing shade and thermal comfort in public areas like parks, playgrounds, schools, and the downtown core, and preparing for poor air quality during heat events, including clean air shelters and mask distribution. Looking ahead, community members also requested updates on progress on other items in the February motion to make the community more climate resilient. Salter-Keene noted that the proposed bylaw amendments required to set a maximum indoor temperature for rental units with AC will be reviewed by the policy committee in July. Extending the mandate to buildings that do not currently have air conditioning installed will be dependent on the findings of the City of Toronto, currently investigating the legal viability of applying such a bylaw to all residential units. This is expected to be complete by the end of the year. Councillor Wendy Steven wrapped up the discussion, noting the comments from residents and what's to come for the city in the next few months.
I just want to acknowledge, Tara made some really good points that there are some actual legit barriers to people using cooling centers. And I think it's worth acknowledging that is definitely true. I think it's also important to acknowledge that the heat response plan is one piece of a bigger picture. I fully agree. It's not sufficient. It's not enough on its own. But I think that this is one piece that is a step in the right direction, at least in formalizing this. I completely agree. I think that the missing piece is going to be when we hear back about the City of Toronto. And I think that'll really put things in perspective of what we can and can't do so that we can hopefully move forward with some really meaningful action.
The heat response plan will be reviewed annually in partnership with the Southeast Health Unit to ensure it remains effective and up to date. Residents can access current information on heat warnings, cooling center hours, and locations, and signs of heat-related illness on the City of Kingston's website.
Once again, that was a flashback to earlier this summer on Kingston's response to extreme heat. Now that we're all caught up, let's dive into an update from Council's Tuesday night meeting. Council's Tuesday night meeting, in the midst of yet another heat wave this summer, Councillor Connie Glenn brought forward a motion for city staff to begin work on an enhanced community heat response plan. While a response plan was completed by staff earlier this summer and the new maximum temperature bylaw for rental units with air conditioning passed in the same meeting, Councillor Connie Glenn states in her motion that Kingston must go further to mitigate the effects of hot weather.
We're all literally feeling the heat right now, in all seriousness. We're seeing the impact on the community. This is a hot, extraordinarily dry summer. We're in the midst of a drought. Everybody I am talking to is feeling it one way or another. This is about moving that envelope a little bit further. The projections for how many heat days we're going to get are a scientific educated guess to some degree. We don't know how much more this is going to accelerate or not. But if we don't plan for it, then we're not able to respond. And so really this is about continuing that planning.
Some additional stipulations not included in the previous plan now call for the establishment of an interagency extreme weather committee and the installation of heat mitigating infrastructure like shade sails. The new plan must also include a review of cooling centers throughout the city and ways to encourage landlords to develop hot weather plans, including the designation of an air-conditioned common room as a cooling space within their buildings. A new plan would also outline a pilot outreach program in partnership with local organizations to go door-to-door in areas with vulnerable populations to check on residents, provide information on available services, and collect data. City staff would also be directed to work with partnering agencies to collect data on water needs during extreme heat events and to ensure those needs are met, exploring options such as water stations, refill taps, and delivery support. The conversation around the horseshoe mostly revolved around what the city currently has jurisdiction over and how other parties mentioned in the motion will be expected to participate, especially landlords. Councillor Gary Osteroff spoke to this issue after staff clarified that the motion cannot demand mandatory action from landlords on this front.
We did receive a letter from the Kingston Rental Properties owners. I think what they're saying is that there's going to be many older buildings with technical limitations. And so, and if it was mandatory, it would be potentially exorbitant costs. So,
while many pieces of this motion will need to be explored by staff to see what action can be taken, Glenn hopes this will be a start in preparing the community for rising temperatures.
Just to be clear, this is about continued outreach and education, as well as some concrete actions. So it was written purposefully to move the envelope as far as possible. But it was also left open because we get told repeatedly not to get into operations. This gives staff some direction, but they can now work through that process of consulting and figuring out what else can be done. And that's going to take time and effort. You know, by voting for this, what we do is we give them the mandate to go ahead and continue this good work. And we're also letting the community know that we are hearing their concerns. We are aware that people are suffering, and we don't want to see that continue.
With the motion passing unanimously, city staff will bring forward an enhanced community heat response plan to the Environment, Infrastructure, and Transportation's Policy Committee by the end of Q1 2026. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Our events calendars are brought to you by our Community News and Arts Coordinator, Ellie Sturton. tonight, join Music Trivia with CFRC's very own Terry at the Loaf and Ale from 7 to 11 p.m. Test your musical knowledge, grab a drink, and enjoy a fun night out with friends. Tomorrow on Saturday, August 23rd, watch a chef from Olivea prepare a dish using locally sourced ingredients at Springer Market Square from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Samples are available after the demo for $2. Join the Adult Hide and Seek fundraiser from 1 to 3 p.m. starting at City Hall. Teams of five compete within set boundaries to raise funds for the Friends of the Kingston Frontenac Public Library. Registration details are available by email at ygktrivia@gmail.com. On Sunday, August 24th, Yoga in the Park is on from 10 to 11 a.m. in Battery Park. Enjoy a free outdoor yoga session led by downtown instructors. Just bring your mat and soak up the summer vibes by the water. The Brock Street Block Party runs from 12 to 4 p.m., closing the streets from King to Wellington for exclusive shopping, a wandering bar, free samples, games, live music, and more. Free and all ages are welcome. On the horizon, we have two Queens events coming up. Aces Queens in the Park, August 31st from 4 to 8 p.m. in City Park, and Aces Sidewalk Sale, September 6th, 10 to 5:30 p.m. on University Avenue. Be sure to add those to your calendar and visit CFRC's booths at both of these events. Have an event you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar? Reach out via cfrc.ca today. And don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at CFRC Music. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for CFRC's Friday afternoon lineup. Next up, we have Democracy Now!, syndicated daily global independent news hosted by award-winning journalists Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 1 p.m., we have This Just In, new music fresh from the mail hosted by our music library manager, Chancellor. At 2 p.m., Whiplash, Anything and Everything with DJ LFN. At 3 p.m., we have the second last episode of The Kingston Curator, all things Kingston local art scene with host Ellie Sturton. And with the OUA football season right around the corner, be sure to stay tuned until 8 when we have the Gales Game Day 2025 season preview. Be sure to stay tuned for all these programs and so much more right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Quaymo!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Egg Salad, a brand new release from local jazz musician Oscar Evans. This is an original jazz composition mixing Brazilian rhythms with classic American swing styles. A bold and funky musical exploration featuring some of Kingston's finest jazz players. Catch Oscar literally everywhere and anywhere in Kingston and keep up with the latest by following him on Instagram at Oscar Mayfield Evans. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Egg Salad by Oscar Evans on your favorite platforms and enjoy it with us now here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Adonis, a super fun, groovy, and very danceable funk pop anthem about admiring a person who seems too heavenly to be human. The subject, Adonis, possesses unshakable, authentic confidence and a striking, undeniable beauty, but yet that Adonis is also humble and fun, sweet, and down to earth. Keep up with the latest from this local funky band by following them on Instagram at NiceOnTheBand. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Adonis by NiceOn on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Give me something real. Tell me how you feel.
I, DJ Tangent. You may know me from episodes of Making Bacon, such as the St. Patrick's Day special, the Homegrown Live preview show, and the Spring Reverb extravaganza. I have my own show now called Numbers with Wings. Join me, and I will take you on a voyage through garage rock, punk, post-punk, cowpunk, Paisley Underground, and more, all view through my, some say, unique perspective. I will be broadcasting live on CFRC 101.9 FM Sundays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on CFRC.ca a few seconds later, or you can check it out at your leisure.
Monday.
Yeah.
When traffic's a nightmare. When the workplace is hectic. When your boss calls you in for a meeting. When nature isn't on your side. There's only one thing you can do.
But no need to wake up the neighbors. Tune in every Monday night from 11 p.m. to midnight for Shed Progressions, where we play an hour of cool jazz to help you relax after a long day. Again, that's Shed Progressions every Monday night at 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
We're not afraid to get a little funky.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat, beat.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat.
Join us every Thursday at 1 on CFRC for your special time with your favorite new